Very good friend.
Yeah, I know.
My name is Naomi Porter. I'm 13 years old. Today is August 5th, and I'm speaking with Carolyn Crowder. We are recording this interview in Rancho Palos Verdes, California. First question, tell me a little bit about your childhood.
Very interesting. I was born just before the start of World War II. I was born in March, and Pearl Harbor happened in December. We were scheduled, my family and I was born in Greenville, South Carolina, but my father's family was from Birmingham, and I was supposed to be christened. That was the word they used back then in a Methodist church in Birmingham, Alabama, that Christmas, and sprinkled upon, which is the tradition at that point, and the beginning of a Christian journey for a child. It did not happen, so I was then christened at age 2.5, and to the horror of my incredibly proper grandmother, I came in my father's arms and I said to the whole congregation, "Hello, I'm here." She never got over that. She never did. She was very embarrassed by me. So I understood sometimes propriety ruled.
What sorts of toys did you play with?
No dolls. I was very much a very active kid, and we didn't have as many toys during that time because it was a time of deprivation in many ways. You couldn't get a lot of the foodstuffs. They were going to the war. You could not, there weren't a lot of toys to be had, and so people improvised and shared. I was more of an outdoor kid. I wanted to go to the park and throw sand at the other children and that sort of thing. That's kind of how you grew up, you know.
Yeah.
And after that, it was skates and bicycles and skinned knees and tree climbing.
Yeah. Could you tell me about one of the more difficult times in your life?
Oh, cancer. Breast cancer was diagnosed in 2002, and I was incredibly lucky. Although I had a bad diagnosis, Esther Smith had just come here as the associate pastor at St. Peter's, and she had heard that I had been pushing very hard for a Stephen ministry program in this church, and she asked me if I would be willing. I said, "Well, there's just a problem. I've been diagnosed with cancer." She said, "Oh, you can do it anyway." And so she kept saying for months, as I hit one complication after another complication and a second surgery and chemo and radiation, "You can do this. You can do this." And in January of 2003, she and another gal and I went to train for Stephen ministry leadership in this church. We were prepared to offer it, and we had 17 in our first class. Shortly thereafter.
Wow, that's great. Can you tell me about some advice and lessons you've learned?
I think perseverance, if nothing else. It would be so easy to get up, give up, and pull. At times, I was so sick. I really just wanted to pull the covers over my head and stay in bed and cuddle the cat, because he was quite willing. And I had somewhere to be or something to do that I felt was very important. And I actually felt better for getting up and doing it. I think the other thing would be to find your passion and keep going.
Those are great advice and lessons. What are you proudest of professionally and personally in your life?
When I was in my 20s, I had the opportunity to work at the University of Texas MD Anderson Hospital and Tumor Institute. I learned a lot, and I was an information coordinator. I started out as a medical writer and was terrible at it. I found out I could lay out books, which we often had to do, and to write articles for the public. But I stayed there because I happened to be able to work for the top doctor there, the guy who was the director. And it was a whole world of working with people so dedicated to doing good in the world and to solving that enigma we called cancer. They're still trying to solve the enigma we call cancer, but it, for the perseverance of people like that, so many changes now, so many of the developments that we've had in the field are, it's just incredible how hard they work. Some of these people would forget to go home. They could, you know, they didn't leave their labs and this sort of thing.
Can you tell me about your involvement with St. Peter's?
When we first came here, we came from another church. And immediately upon coming, I was asked, almost after I became a deacon, I did that four times, don't ask, I kept saying, not saying no, and then became the moderator of deacons, and then an elder, the founder of the Stephen Ministry Program, and I guess the thing I'm most proud of is the starting of a program called Reluctant Sisterhood. In 2006, three altos in the choir were diagnosed with cancer, one right after another. And there was a great need to be supportive of them in ways that were greater than the usual support that you receive through a deacon and prayer. And so Esther and I decided that what we needed to do was to build a network where when there was a need, we could find people to fill it, whether it was transportation, listening, meals, whatever that was be on the sharing that comes with being in a Christian community and sharing the load. And it's still going. There are 40 of us at the present time in the group. It's sad we had to come together with cancer, but we did.
How has St. Peter's been a meaningful place for you?
It is also often a very frustrating place, but faith without practice of faith loses a lot of what makes Christianity such a, you have to live it as well as believe it when you can, when you have that ability to reach out to others and represent what is important, what your values are, which in this case is your Christianity, in a form of service to others. Otherwise, it's nice to worship. It's good to worship, but it often leaves you feeling empty and frustrated if there's not something you can do for someone else or put your faith into practice.
What important lessons has your religion, Christianity, taught you?
Oh, boy, that's a good question. Persevere. Even when I served as an elder, it was very frustrating. It was a difficult time in the church. But if you hang in there and you really can listen to other people's opinions without being totally judgmental. I haven't learned not to be judgmental. You're absolutely wrong, say I sometimes. But actually listen, then you begin to get a feel for where they are too, and decision making in context, you begin to feel that you have made at least as best you could a meaningful decision for the community at large as we serve it. Sometimes you don't.
What changes do you see for kids growing up now in contrast from your childhood?
It really concerned me this summer at Vacation Bible School, the impact that social media and our cell phones are having on your generation of people. There seems to be less action, less interaction among people and among kids than there was. And when you saw them at VBS, sans cell phones, even some of the younger kids had their cell phones with them. I know it was to call mom, that sort of thing, but it worried me, and it still worries me. But when I need to use my cell phone, I have to find you, or it used to be I could find Sharon's kid or Marie Chura's, because it took me a long time to learn to use one. But I find it's isolating. I think kids don't do as much together as I'd like to see. I would really like to see.
And then for a last question to wrap it up, can you tell me about a favorite memory or story?
I guess it's having gone to Stephen Ministry Leadership Training almost bald. I had only down on my head at that point after chemo, and I was feeling very apprehensive. I'd taken my wig, but in Orlando, Florida, that was not exactly what you wanted to be wearing. It was a little hot under there. Besides, I always thought there was a gerbil loose up in the top. And the absolute acceptance of me, where I was and what I was doing and why I was doing it. And I had never felt that before in that same way in a group.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time.